Friends, we are continuing in our all-church focus. I love my church, and I'm going to ask you for a little grace today. In football terms, sometimes overtime, we love overtime. This stewardship series, there is only one sermon that's dedicated to financial giving. In Christian stewardship, that's a passion of mine. It creates space in your life to see God do incredible things. So can I just ask all of us, maybe just to breathe for a moment. Won't be too late. I've got the watch, but I just want to set everyone letting know we may just be running over going into overtime. Can you give your pastor that much grace today? Okay, well, all right. Thanks. Okay, a mixed house, and it always is. Okay, let's pray. God, may the words of my mouth and the meditation of all of our hearts prove to be pleasing and acceptable in your sight. O Lord, our rock and salvation. Amen. Well, this week has been a long one, and moments really long. The difficulty came for me Friday, getting home from Kansas City, getting home here. This week, Wes Johnson, Clyde Kunkel, they're two great lay leaders of our church, and myself, we attended the United Methodist Church of the Resurrection's annual Leadership Institute. You may have heard of Reverend Adam Hamilton. He's the senior pastor there. Church of the Resurrection is the biggest of the United Methodist churches in our connection. And this year focused on walking with hope into the future, no matter what our denomination may choose or what configurations may be coming in the future. We were there simply to listen and to learn, and we have come back with a sense of hope. But Friday was trying. During closing worship, I get a text from American Airlines that says, your flight that you were originally scheduled for out of Kansas City to Chicago to get your connection, it has been delayed, and you may miss your connection home. So with that, I jumped out of worship. I missed communion. I got on the phone to American Airlines. They got me on another flight, but I had to be in the airport literally in 1 hour. If you've been there, that's tough. So I sent a text to Clay and Wes, or not Clay, Clyde and Wes. We need to leave now. And so they came. We jumped into the rental car. They took me to the gate. Got it there just in time, got onto the plane. There was a lot of thunderstorms in the Chicago area. Our pilot, he gave it the best college try. He got it out on the tarmac, said he wanted to get out. We had a window, and sure enough, as we were ready to go next, the call came in. This flight has been delayed. So back to the gate, unboarding, waiting another hour and a half to try again. Well, now I calculated it. I had about 8 minutes once we got to Chicago to get off my plane, on the plane home, got back on the plane, door closed, and then suddenly not only my phone started beeping and vibrating all around me, beep, beep, buzz, 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 your flight home tonight is canceled. Matter of fact, everything out of O'Hare tonight is canceled. So I was taking a trip to Chicago, and I was, at that moment, bummed. I just bummed. I just wanted to be home. But then the guy in the aisle next to me, he said something really cool. He looked at his phone, and he said, "Oh, well, I love Chicago pizza." Don't we all love Chicago pizza? And as I was thinking about that, loving Chicago pizza, you know, the English language is imprecise. With a very important word, and that word is love. Love. We only have one word to express this desire, this devotion, this commitment, our preference. We have one word. That's why we use that one word to say, "I love Chicago pizza." And in another instance, we could say that to a person who we want to give our life to, or they want to give their life to us, our heart to. Same word, pizza. And your deepest love, the word love. The Greek language, however, understands that love is multifaceted and there is different levels of intensity when it comes to love. The Greeks, for example, have the word phileo, and that's translated love. Phileo is the affectionate friend, type of love. of love among friends. The city of Philadelphia is called the city of brotherly love. Philadelphia, phileo. Greeks give us that gift. Greeks also have another word for love that is different than phileo. It is eros. Eros. And eros is the root of our English word erotic. Erotic. Love between two lovers. The fire between two lovers. The Greeks had a word for that type of love. And then finally, at the top of the pyramid, at the summit, the very top, the highest love. It's a word that communicates unconditional love, love with no strings attached, love that is sacrificial, love so deep that it may call you to die for the person that you love. Now, if you've been to a Chrysalis flight or an Emmaus walk, you know this word. You've heard it before. So we're going to say it together. This is a Greek word for the highest level of love, and that word is agape. All right. You know that, agape love. When Jesus, on the last night of his life, gathered in a garden to share a vision of what his church was to be, Jesus looked at his apostles and said, "Love each other as much as I have loved you." And the word was not phileo. The word was not love each other when you're all getting along and liking each other. Agape, each other. Love each other sacrificially as I have loved you. That's Jesus' dream for his church. That's his dream for us. So the question then becomes, what does it look like when a church tries to agape one another, love each other deeply, no strings attached, unconditionally, sacrificially? Well, today we get a glimpse of this from the book of Acts. Acts is the history of the first church, which began in Jerusalem. And it's written by Luke. And we are given this picture of how much the early Christians loved each other as they literally divested themselves of all of their possessions, sold their possessions, brought that money together, and laid it at the apostles' feet so that two things could happen. Number one, there would be no one in need within the baptismal family. Everyone would be cared for. And then secondly, those proceeds were used to fuel the mission. The commission that Jesus gave his church: go and make disciples in my name. One could argue that this one Stewardship Commitment Sunday is certainly the one that is unmatched in intensity. But nobody can argue that that was a phileo type of love. This was agape, agape, agape. A love for each other, a love for the Lord of the church, and a love for his commission. Now, we know that this bold picture of Christian stewardship, divesting, selling homes, property, bringing it all, that this model was unsustainable. And it was only practiced at the very beginning of the story of the church. Now, the question then becomes, what compelled then these first Christians to give this way, this agape type way? Well, most scholars agree that the early church at this point believed that Jesus was going to come back any day. And when you have that mentality, why do you need these things that are all going to evaporate with the new heaven and the new earth? Let's divest of them now as we ready ourselves for the return of Christ. So the church had its gaze up toward the clouds. But after a time, when it became clear that Jesus is tarrying his coming, at that point, the church took its eyes off the skies and instead looked to the four horizons and instead embraced a new model for sustainability, a sustainability for the long term. And that is, the church turned again to the tried and true biblical practice, both affirmed in the Old and the New Testament, of tithing. Tithing begins with the assumption that God has given all to us. All of it is his. And what God is asking is that we just give 1 in 10 back. 1 in 10 back so that all within the community are cared for and the mission is fueled. No matter the funding model for the Christ Church, whether give it all up front, that model was not sustainable, or a measured, consistent, disciplined way in giving for the mission, no matter what model, we need to be grateful that Luke gives us this picture of this incredible stewardship commitment Sunday. It shows us about a church where so much agape could be generated and so much agape love could be shared. Now, we have a picture of early church generosity from Acts. Now, let's think about some moments in this church's history when we have experienced or shared in that agape spirit, given in incredible ways. This church was founded in 1894, and the most pivotal moment, arguably, in the life of this church happened in 1958, or one of the most pivotal, 1958. Our church was located in the Old West End, and on a Saturday night, an arson set our church on fire, burned the building. Our baptismal font is from that original facility. It fell through the basement door floor, but it survived. It served us well this morning. You can still see the scars. But after that fire, there's three things that we need to celebrate about our mothers and fathers of this church. Number one, even 3 or 4 hours after the fire was put out in 1958, on that Sunday morning, Epworth worshiped. Epworth worshiped. There was nothing that was going to keep us from each other and God. Never missed a Sunday during those years when they had no home to worship in. Second thing you need to know is during that time, they took advantage of a crisis. That's the thing about a crisis. Crisis has come. You take advantage of the crisis. It provides opportunity. That fire made that church rethink everything. They said to themselves, prayerfully, who is God calling us to reach next? So they made a decision. They decided we're going to leave the Old West End and we're going to head miles west because we expect that the growth of Toledo will be heading west. And they purchased this land, Valley View and Central. They left thriving neighborhoods, businesses, all of that behind, and they moved out to a place where you would find cornfields and gravel roads because they were strategic. They were planning. They anticipated that soon and very soon, we're going to have schools of fish running underneath our boat. New people that we can invite into an eternal relationship with Jesus Christ. All we're going to need to do in this location is to throw out our nets because the fish are coming to us. What vision. What boldness and how God rewarded that. And then finally, they made a very agape-like decision when they constructed this church. In today's dollars, 1960, 61, this facility was $12 million. That's a lot of love for each other, a lot of love for the Lord of the church, a lot of love for the fulfilling of the mission, go and make disciples. Now, I could share some other moments, glimpses from Epworth's story past of agape moments when we loved that sacrificially, we gave that much. But let's advance the timeline. I think, for example, of a beautiful thing that happened here this summer. Our Good Samaritan Fund, which we use primarily to help our own members who are in financial need, it dipped into the red this summer. We were out of funds. We also use that to help indigent folks who come to the church. We give that out in very measured ways. But with our members, if there's a question between medicine and groceries, we're going to make sure our members get both. If there's a difference between getting the car repaired and not getting the work, we're going to help our member get the car repaired. And so it goes. Nobody raises money in the middle of the summer. But when we put this need out to this family, in the dead of summer, 2 weeks, we received over $15,000 that replenished that fund like that. That's agape. That's people loving each other. That's also a sign, brothers and sisters, that in this church, we have been blessed. We are well-resourced people, most of us. Another example that's just quietly happening now is that our administrative council in May was wrestling with the question. We had a great capital campaign in 2015, $4.6 million raised. We built the facility. We've got a $1.5 million mortgage now that stands with us. It's going to require $90,000 for service next year. And money, that's money going to the bank that could be used for mission and ministry. So understandably, our lay leadership, there's a lot of energy to say, we need to get this taken care of. But our lay leadership in May wisely said, this is good. We want to do it. Let's put it on the back burner. And let's focus our attention on reaching new people. A plan to grow our church, to set our nets deeper, or to find a new way to find new people. So the Gear Up team began, and they're constructing their work now. But even though our church at this hour does not have a formal debt retirement campaign, still, quietly and unassuming ways, we have received some major gifts over these past couple months. People quietly saying, I want to use this to pay down the debt. Agape, love for the church and love for its mission, wanting to ensure that every dollar is used for mission and ministry. And now our Gear Up plan team, they're now working on a strategic growth plan, uncovering the Epworth promise. How do we share the promise? All of that. The timeline is to have them present to our leadership by the end of the year. This is lay-led. They're doing a great job. It's great to be on this team. But friends, we haven't come yet to the budgetary requirements to grow one's church. You know, in any business, if you want to grow, you have to make an investment. I suspect that this implementation plan will probably have a call for increased funding so that we can tell the Epworth story via not only social media, but radio and TV and other avenues. Brothers and sisters, that requires an investment. That could be expensive. But it's like a farm. If you want to harvest, you got to buy the seed. That's what we're looking at next year. I don't know, the implementation plan may also include a recommendation that maybe we dedicate either a clergy person or a staff person to the work of evangelism, meaning we don't want to see this person in the church office. We don't want them going to 14 committee meetings during a month. What we want them to do is to be out in the community in places where people gather, millennials, maybe some of our trendy coffee shops, other locales. Don't want to just name one demographic. Jesus wants everybody. But this person is out there building relationships with a purpose. Invite them to this church, and more importantly, invite them into an eternal relationship with Jesus Christ. Make them a disciple. Help us make them a disciple. That's the mission. I don't know. The plan may call for that. That's going to require an investment. If we want to grow, we got to invest. They're not mutually exclusive. So, friends, if we're looking to express agape love via our giving, what are some practical suggestions to take this step, to show this type of love? First, if you don't pledge, I would ask you to prayerfully consider pledging, maybe for the first time in your life. Put it on a card. We have a great finance committee here at the church. They do a great job of constructing a budget for mission and ministry annually, but they do not have this gift. They are not mind readers. They can't read your mind or mine. Why not say, take a step to say, I'm going to shoot for this in 2020. And all you need at any time to up a pledge or bring it down is a phone call or an email. Consider pledging. Secondly, consider halting unintended decline. Consider halting unintended decline. Friends, we have so many faithful givers here who give annually, weekly, or monthly via electronic means. It's a large core of our church. They give faithfully. Thank you. However, I have noticed that over the years, and again, I don't know who gives what, but there's always the report of kind of a large group in that pool who simply say each year, put me down for what I did last year. Put me down for what I did last year. Now, when you do that 3, 4, 5 years in a row, in the end, that is a decline in your giving when you consider the cost of things. So for those who choose to give this way, thank you again for your gifts. But would you consider this year making an adjustment? Maybe a 10% adjustment as we move forward together. And then finally, for all of us, consider a 10% step forward, moving us closer to a tithe, which is the biblical standard for Christian giving. And this can be done really practically when you think about it. For that family or person who pledges $3,500 a year, a 10% increase is $350. That's less than $1 a day in order to help move us forward and help us reach new people. This is something, when we consider the state of our national and local economy, thank God for the blessings that we're enjoying in this hour. I think for most of us, this is a very doable step. Would you prayerfully consider that? Friends, no matter your decisions about what you intend to give and what you ultimately give, as your pastor, I simply ask you to pray about it before you do it. Pray about it and listen. And no matter what you offer, offer it from a heart filled with love, agape love. Amen.